Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Good evening, happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 104, and I am your host, Beam Weeks, and with me is my co-host, Stephen Gies. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
Well, I've been a little bit better. I decided to take a tumble and fall last night and messed up my knee, swelled up like a softball, and messed up my shoulder. But they're fine. I'm recovering. So if you hear me shift positions here and make this involuntary noise, do not be surprised, because it's been happening all day today. It can get ugly. Frogs are doing great. I appreciate the inquiries. Apparently those frogs are more popular than me or my books combined. I get lots of comments and questions and stuff, and people posting their frogs on social media and tagging me with them. So frogs are doing cool. Last 4 days, I've had a big, gorgeous Luna moth out there. Those things are beautiful. And he's hanging with the frogs. Every time I go look, he's in a different position. So he's doing all right. He's just hanging out. But other than that, it's been a good week, because we finally tracked down one of our authors, Dr. Helen Burrell. She had been kind of missing in action for a month there, and, you know, I talked to the doorman at her building in New York, and they said she had gone to the hospital, and I had talked to her a few days before that and knew that she was fighting pneumonia and some other medical issues, and then she went to the hospital, and we had no way to contact her, and her family wasn't returning calls. So we've been hunting for her for a month, and then finally we found her. She's in a rehab facility. She called us a couple days ago. She's been checking in with us. She's doing fairly well. You know, she's dealing with some issues and stuff, but she sounds chipper, and we're just thrilled to know that she is at least fairly okay, and we are back in contact again. So best to you, Dr. Helen. We appreciate all your support. We're your friends, not just your publishers, and we're out here rooting for you.
Yes, indeed. So glad to hear that she's, you know, on the mend, and we hope to have her back in the audience. She's a loyal member of our listening audience here, and she's been on the show a time or two as well. So now, before our program, there's another great podcast. This is a video podcast, and it's live. It's the Meet the Authors podcast, and I was watching them tonight, as I tend to before each of these shows, before we go live, and you can watch them too every night, the hour before this one. They're over on YouTube. It's Rob and Joan Carter.
That's every Wednesday night.
Yeah, that's tonight. It's Wednesday night. What did I say?
Yeah, you said every night.
I'm at every Wednesday night. Every Wednesday night prior to this show, it's on. This show starts 8 o'clock Eastern time. Their show starts at 7 o'clock Eastern time. And they can be found on YouTube at the Indie Book Source channel. So go over there and check out the Indie Book Source channel. They've got all the previous episodes are archived over there for them as well. And they go live, and you can communicate with them on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube. So, I mean, there's all kinds of ways to watch and to...
LinkedIn is a good place with them, too.
LinkedIn as well,
LinkedIn,
yeah.
They send out the podcast invitations. That's how I get my LinkedIn each to it.
Yeah, so get over there. We're going to have a commercial from them as well before too long. They're working on one, so we will have one. In the meantime, here's a commercial for how you can participate in tonight's episode.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right.
Hey, hey.
So pick up your phone and give us a call. Use the hashtag. I like this stuff.
Yep. Now, we got a couple of books that were looking to go into pre-sale this week. One of them is Practical Problems, 10 plays, 10 stories by J. Ash Looney, and they are actually plays, which, you know, can be performed on stage. They're short plays, some of them based on real things, some of them entirely fictional. All of them are interesting reads, and whether you buy it, you know, just to perform on stage, that doesn't really matter because they're just good stories. So you can just buy it and read it and look at it that way too. We don't have the video for it done yet. It's actually done. It just needs to be exported and probably get that up on YouTube in the next day or two. The video for the other book we're trying to get out this week, Water Lilies Over My Grave, is on YouTube right now. Get over there, like it, and then like it again and share it. And make sure everybody's aware of it. But that's a very cool book that was edited by co-host Beam Weeks here. Would you endorse this book, Beam?
I would highly endorse this book. Patricia A. Guthrie is a stellar writer. She knows her stuff. So I'm going to write a review for her Eerie Charms of the Short Story here when I get a chance, but I haven't had any time to write a book review, but I'm going to give her a glowing review on that one as well. So pick that one up. Now, I've been hard at work this week producing a couple of audiobooks. I've got all of the files for Ellie Collins' audiobook, Mad Max and Sweet Sarah, and I've got most of the files for Girl Wears Those Shoes by Jenny Wong. So I am working on those throughout the afternoons, and today I couldn't do any work because I had a dentist appointment and was out and about on the road all day. So I'll get back to that tomorrow, but keep your eyes open on the newsletter. And speaking of the newsletter, if you want to know how you can keep your eyes open on the newsletter and have it in your email box every Wednesday, this is how.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Inquiry with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What?
Hey. This week's print bestsellers. Went over and had a look a couple of minutes ago, shook my head, fell on the floor, reminded myself I got to quit doing that. That hurts like crazy. Got back up again and looked at the numbers, and they were true. Maximizing Happiness Through Intimate Communication, third edition by the Doctors Shearer. That's Marshall L. and Margaret R. Shearer. Number one print bestseller for Fresh Ink Group this week. We still haven't figured that out, but Beam and I agree we need to get a trailer made for this book and get out there and start doing some additional promotion, see if we can keep this thing goosed while it's really going. The next two are by Mary Schmidt, Fresh Ink Group member and author. Sammy, Hero at Age 5, which is a memoir about her son's battle with cancer, and it's a little bit more of his life and the pictures and growing up and all the stuff that went into the sad, tragic ending. He was 5 years old when he lost his battle with brain cancer. And the next book here, When Angels Fly, is on the same topic, but it's more of the behind the scenes, what Mary had to deal with in dealing with the doctors and the hospitals and the bureaucracy and the insurance and all that kind of stuff. And she has some very strong opinions about what went right and what did not go right about that whole process. These are very poignant books. And that's in our number two and three slots, Sammy, Hero at Age 5, and When Angels Fly. And now our fourth and fifth slots are occupied by the same book, hardcover and softcover, and they are selling exactly the same numbers, precisely the same numbers, neck and neck, hardcover and softcover. And Beam, can you guess whose book that is?
I'm guessing it's somebody that played in a band called Alabama.
Yeah, that would be Mark Herndon, Country Music All Hall right. of Fame drummer, his memoir called The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. We published that book in 2016. 6 years
yeah.
that's been on our list, and it tends
yeah.
to ride in our top five or top 10 bestsellers every time, year after year. So that book's doing all right. Congratulations, Mark Herndon, and congratulations to all of you. Now, I'm sure we have some Willis Cross and a couple of others in the 6, 7, and 8 slots, but I'm only looking at the top 5 when I do this, so don't feel left out.
Yeah, and we got over here on Twitter. I'm going to jump over here because Verwayne Greenho, one of our most loyal listeners, he says, I just uploaded a new 1900-word murder mystery investigation Vela episode, number 36. Our killer is preparing to leave, but he has one last set of targets in Florida before going back home. Things are heating up. Can it get any hotter in Florida? Vern says, yes, it can. So if you guys, listeners out there, guys and gals, if you missed an episode of our show, you know, you can always find it in the archive. If you listen to an episode that you really enjoyed and you want to hear it again, you can find it in the very same archive. And here's where how you can find those.
If you miss a show, find us in the archive, in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe, our favorite
like
words.
Like and subscribe. Thumbs
that,
up.
That, and here's your money, you know.
All right.
You want to go ahead and roll a commercial and then introduce this week's guest?
Sure.
Still Not Enough examines the plight of minority millennials in the workforce. Janelle A. Jordan details her own perspective-molding cultural upbringing, along with professional encounters hindered by others' preconceived notions and unconscious biases. She shares examples that are relatable to many with similar experiences. The scars from every denial fueled the desire for each minority millennial to do more. This book also guides leaders managing today's DE&I employees. Norms are evolving, and organizations must adapt or be left behind. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in all print and digital formats worldwide, Still Not Enough brings transparency to the challenges of today's younger and more inclusive workforce.
All right. Yeah.
Now, that book is in pre-sale now. It's going to be released August 9th, so you can go right this minute and order your copy.
And Janelle A. Jordan, the author there, she was on the show here a couple weeks ago, and in the archive, her numbers are just skyrocketing. There's a lot of interest in her episode. It's the top episode right now throughout our various archived episodes for the last couple of weeks. So, hey, get over there if you missed it. Get over there and give it a listen and find out what all the hubbub's about.
I'll tell you.
All right. Now to our guest. Caleb Pirtle III is an award-winning author who may live in the present, but he prefers the past. He is happiest when digging down beneath mounds of antiquated newspapers, diaries, and other research materials to track down information that becomes part of his historical mysteries, historical thrillers. He believes that good fiction is always built on nuggets of truth. Pirtle has been writing all his life and has published more than 85 books, mostly nonfiction travel and historical books. He began working with newspapers, both large and small, including the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. He was hired to handle travel publicity for Texas when Governor John Connally created the Texas Tourist Development Agency and moved on to become the first travel editor for Southern Living Magazine. He later served as editorial director for a Dallas custom publisher and began writing fiction about 10 years ago. Pirtle grew up in Kilgore, a small town that became a boom town during the Great Depression. He majored in journalism at the University of Texas, became the first student to ever win the National William Randolph Hearst Award for feature writing. Much of his life is covered in his memoir of sorts. I'm watching the screen. It's lighting up with callers. As
okay.
I'm reading this, it seems like, boom, there's another one. So hold on, callers, we will get to you. Much of his life is covered in his memoir of sorts, The Man Who Talks to Strangers, and his travel writing can be found in Confessions from the Road. His ZIT, is that what that is? XIT? The American Cowboy was produced with members of the Texas Artists Association and became the third best-selling art book of all time. Wow, big doings there. Pirtle presently lives with his wife, Linda, a cozy mystery author in Fort Worth, Texas. So welcome to the show, Caleb.
Welcome,
Caleb.
I'm delighted to be here.
All right. We obviously, there's a lot of people. This is lighting up like a, you know, cliche Christmas tree, my board here with callers. That's good. So we'll get to the callers here in a bit. So how about we start with where are you from, where have you lived, and where are you now? We got some of that in here, but expound.
And how'd you wind up in Dallas?
Yeah, and how'd you wind up there in the Big D?
Well, I grew up on a farm there near Pettner's Junction, Texas, and then moved to Kilgore, which, as you said, was a boom time back during the Great Depression. And then when I lived there, it still had the ragged edges of a boom town all over it. And you know, it was one of those situations, you grow up, you leave home, you go to college, you get a degree, and you never plan to go back. Well, we lived in Austin for a time, lived in Fort Worth for a time, spent 10 of the best years of my life in Birmingham, Alabama, with Southern Living magazine. And after all those years, Linda and I wound up back in East Texas within striking distance from Kilgore. We lived at Hideaway Lake near Tyler, and that was our forever home. That's where I was going to write my last sentence and draw my last breath. And then our son and his wife had two little redheads. And my grandson is a real good soccer player and a real good baseball player. And all of a sudden, we were on the road 2.5 hours every Saturday morning driving to Fort Worth to watch him play soccer or baseball, and then driving 2.5 hours back home. And one day, Linda said, you know, we don't have to do this. We can get closer. So as she says, she moved closer to her grandkids, and I moved closer to the soccer fields and the baseball fields. And we wound up in North Fort Worth, just across the railroad tracks from Keller.
What a journey. And, you know, I got to tell you, Caleb, our first managing director of Fresh Ink Group, who ran things for us for about 20 years, lived in Roanoke, Texas, which we determined is just a few miles from where you are. And
about
every now and then,
5 miles. Yeah.
And
it's a great little town.
We lost Dan about 6 or 7 years ago to cancer suddenly and unexpectedly. But I talk to her husband every now and then, and I'm telling you, if you called me or her husband called me, I would not know the difference, because you guys sound like Dallas, Texas to me.
Well, and then, you know, if she lived in Roanoke, you had a real fusion of that good old West Texas spirit in your company.
Yeah. Yeah, she loved Texas, that's for sure. And every year she and her husband got a little trailer and went to the hill country so that they could watch the bluebells bloom. And then she'd always send me pictures of the bluebells. Is it bluebells or bluebonnets? Bluebonnets, isn't it?
It's bluebonnets.
Yeah, one of these days I'm going to get that straight.
Well, don't rush into anything.
So, Beam, you say we got a handful of callers waiting already?
We got a handful of callers.
All right. Well, listeners, as we get through this show, you know, we've got some questions on paper that we might or might not get to. And if you call in, you might ask them for us. But at some point, Caleb's going to talk about several of his series, Boomtown Saga, Ambrose Lincoln series, The Man on the Run series. So if you got questions about any of that, you want to just endorse his books, comments, or whatever, go ahead and call in. We'll wing it, and then we'll see if there's any questions that didn't get asked by the end of the show. So, Beam, let's ask the calls.
Okay, so here's how I'm going to do it, because there's quite a few callers here. So I'm going to read the first caller. I'm going to read your area code and then the first three digits of your phone number, so because there's some from the same area code. So you'll know which one I'm talking to. The first one, let me click this button here. The first one is going to be area code 214-202. Welcome to the show. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Well, my name is Linda Pirtle, and I share a house with Caleb.
Hi, we've heard of you.
Welcome to the show, Linda.
We've been checking out your books this week, too. That's a good marketing strategy.
Well, thank you.
Get your husband out there. Yeah.
Thank you. I really never intended to become an author, but Caleb dared me to write a novel, and so I could not pass up a dare.
Yeah.
And I wrote my first book, The Mahjong Murders.
Cool.
All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, Linda,
thank you. It's been a trip.
Yeah. Well, Linda was an English teacher, and she had taught of books and British literature all those years and couldn't understand why I spent my Sundays writing while she was reading. So I told her, why don't you get in on Sunday and write too? And she wrote the Mahjong verse, and she sells more books than I do.
Well, he's been overly kind. You know that. So I can't compete with him. I don't even try.
Well, being an English teacher.
The difference between Linda and I is I write every day, and Linda writes on Wednesdays.
Oh, okay.
Today was my day to write. I wrote a chapter.
That's why often we ask writers about their process, because we hear things like that. No, I only write on Wednesdays and only during a full moon.
That's funny. Well, Caleb and I write totally different. We have different styles, of course. And when I first began to write, he said, you're writing like an English teacher. This just will not do. So it's really been a challenge. I always taught technical writing, and I wrote grants for the school district where I worked, and that's totally different than creative fiction.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I was going to say, you being an English teacher, I'm guessing you've got the mechanics down straight, but what's it like for you being a first-time novelist?
Well, it's been a challenge. I'm a plotter, and I outline a whole book before I even write the first word.
Yay. I love you.
So, you know, I taught outlines. You know where you have to use that outline as a roadmap. So I have to practice what I preached all those years.
Yeah.
Yeah, they come in handy.
Cool.
They do. They do. When you write only on Wednesdays, you really need that outline to refresh your memory.
The Wednesday Writer. There's a new book for you.
So you're endorsing.
A liberation. Yeah.
So you're endorsing Caleb's books. You recommend to our listeners they check them out.
Absolutely. You know, I have the privilege of editing those books, so I get to see them firsthand, and I'm just really proud of him.
Yeah. Cool. And listeners, of course, if you're out there looking for books by a Purtle, there's more than one Purtle, you know.
Yeah, she doesn't say that when she edits and brings out the knives and axes and leaves blood splattered in the carpet.
Well, thanks for calling in, Linda. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, and I won't take up any more time because I know there are those who are waiting. Yeah.
And when your next book comes out, let us know. We'll help you promote it.
I certainly will, and thank
you. Yeah. Thanks
now,
a lot, Linda.
You want to look at Twitter real quick before you go to any more calls?
Yeah.
I see Joe Conzel here. Hello, everyone. Looking forward to listening to Caleb talk about his writing career tonight. You got
okay.
the next one?
Yeah.
Robert Willis Croft says, welcome back, Helen.
Yeah, welcome back, Helen. Verwayne Greenhall, a big hello and get well soon. Shout out to my friend Helen Burrell.
Yeah, Helen.
And Marlena Smith Burris says, nuggets of truth. I love that.
Yeah. Joe Conzel says, hi, Caleb. Since he's kind of a loner, do you have any plans for Graham Houston from Eulogy in Black and White to move on from Magnolia Bluff and star in his own series? Or is he going to just settle in at the newspaper? Ooh, that's a good question.
He's probably going to settle in at the newspaper. But book two will come out next year, and we'll see what Graham is up to. He's kind of a drifter. He has no reason to stay anywhere except he gets fascinated with the people. And then if you're a newspaper guy and you're surrounded by a bunch of eccentric people, you hate to move on. There's always one story and one street corner left to be written about.
Yeah. And then Marlena Smith-Burris, she says Southern Living Magazine is one of the first magazines I remember reading. Still love it.
Well, good
All
for
right.
you.
Yeah.
I put in 10 years at Southern Living. Their first travel editor in those first years, we hung on with broken fingernails. And finally, we caught hold, and the magazine took off.
All right. How about we move on to
and then take a call?
Yeah.
Commercials out.
We lost one caller, so we want to take care of those before too long.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do Water Lilies Over My Grave.
Psychologist Annabelle O'Brien flees from her psychotic ex-husband in New York City, only to find he is stalking her across the country with deadly intentions. She takes a job in the resort town of Lake Nage. When a series of attacks place her in even greater danger, Annabelle turns to hostile burnout of a detective, Mark Driscoll, who is assigned to protect her. Then, two women who resemble her are murdered, and the town is gripped with fear. Mark and Annabelle must work together to catch the killer before he catches them. From the celebrated author of such bestsellers as Legacy of Danger and her collection Eerie Charms of the Short Story, Water Lilies Over My Grave is a novel of psychological suspense about one woman searching for a new life, even as she is threatened by her old one. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Water Lilies Over My Grave is available in all print and digital formats worldwide.
A fantastic piece of writing there, so get out there and grab your copy.
Yeah,
all right.
Check out the video.
We are going to go move to the next caller. Now, this caller is going to be same area code, area 214, but the first three digits are 244. 214, 244. Welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Well, awesome. Hello, Beam and Steven. This is Rox Berkey in Dallas, Texas.
Hi, Rox.
Well, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. What an honor to be part of this fun evening.
All right.
That Rox is one of my favorite people. Got an absolutely brilliant writer.
Oh, cool.
She and her writing partner, Charles Brakefield, have the best-selling Enigma series. They're techno thrillers, and if you really want to go into a world that you didn't know exists, just read one of their novels.
Wow.
Okay, Liv, you are
there's
way
a lot more
mind.
Truth there than I hoped.
Way too kind, but thank you.
So you have a question or a comment?
You know, I have a comment. The Eulogy in Black and White is a fabulous Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicle installment. It's book two in that particular series, but you know, the best part of this series is every book stands on its own, and Graham is quite the character.
And in fact, the Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicles, it is kind of a fascinating experiment. There are 10 different authors that all got together and chose one little mythical fictional town, and we all created characters in that town, and then everybody each month comes out with a new book, and we all use each other's characters. So after a while, if you keep reading the series, it's as though that you live in the same neighborhood as the characters in Magnolia Bluff. And Roxanne and Charles, their Magnolia Bluff book, The Flower Enigma, is coming out next month.
It is, and we're looking forward to it. It's actually on pre-order right now. But, you know, using different characters that you didn't create is fascinating. It's a different kind of study, and, you know, we walk around the same town, but we all have our own perspective.
Boy.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. That's what I was going to ask is, like, the point of view. Is, like, your character going to be the main point of view, but other people's characters are there as well? Or do you write from
exactly.
the point of view of somebody else's character? Okay.
No, exactly. So I have characters that come from five of the authors that are out there. I've got one of Linda's characters because she's part of the series as well. I've got Caleb character. I've got CW character. So, I mean, it's a very fascinating study in how to look at a small town in Texas.
Yeah, it's really a study in human nature because that's the way it really is. The way I see Graham Houston, my character, Roxanne can view him in an entirely different way. C.W. Halls views him in an entirely different way. we all view the same people from, as she said, a different perspective. And that's what fleshes that character out and gives him a lot more depth and a lot more mystery, because there are a lot more secrets involved than anybody knows.
Yes, secrets.
And there is more death in Magnolia Bluff than there are population. It's amazing who died in Magnolia Bluff. Right, Caleb?
Yeah, the only thing that grows in Magnolia Bluff is the cemetery.
Read that.
That sounds like a good read.
But I just wanted to jump in and say Caleb is a fabulous author for many of his works, which I have read, and I've enjoyed one after another. The Magnolia series, you know, we're having fun with that because we're kind of doing it together. But any of his books, your listeners will delve into and become hooked, period.
Hmm. All right.
Now, listeners, if you're interested in our caller's book, it's Rox Burkey, B-U-R-K-E-Y, and her Enigma series is with Charles V. Brakefield, and it's Bill Brakefield and Burkey. So if you're having trouble finding them, try a couple of different ways. It took me a second on Amazon to come up with them. But it's books like The Enigma Ray, The Enigma Factor. They've got a cool series going here, and that's Rox Burkey, B-U-R-K-E-Y.
Thank you so much. You guys have a great one. I love the show. Thank you.
Yeah, thank
hey,
you.
Hey, thanks for coming on.
We're shameless promoters, so we're always looking for a chance. Thanks for
all
calling
right.
me, Rox.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah,
now,
thank God for shameless promoters.
All right, so the next caller, this one is going to be just the area code, because this is a different area code. So area code 813, there we go. Area code 813, you are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, shameless promoters, Rob and Joan. How are you doing?
We're doing well. Welcome to the show, Rob and Joan.
Yeah.
We gave
Thank
you a shout-out.
It seems like I just saw you a few minutes ago.
Yeah, we just go from show to show, you know, take over other people's shows. We try.
Just wander around.
Yeah, nothing else to do.
But I do want to say that Caleb and Linda are both wonderful authors, and so are Roxy and CW. We talked about them. And Joe Conchel, who's not in Magnolia Bluff, but is also a great author. I'm reading Linda's book right now, actually, The Mahjong Murders, along with we're reading the Magnolia Bluff series. And our question is actually about Magnolia Bluff, because you're now going to have a series two, Caleb, isn't that correct, where we
That's
revisit
correct.
Magnolia
yeah,
Bluff?
The last book in series one will be in December, and then we all jump back in next year.
So how the heck are you going to repopulate that little town so that you can murder more people?
You know, that's also a fascinating thing, because all of the authors use about 90% of the characters who live in Magnolia Bluff, but they always bring new characters in with them. So, you know, it behooves us all to read the new books that come along, so we'll know which characters to write about next year. We may get rid of 10 and bring in 12 more. So Magnolia Bluff, against its wisdom and better judgment, will continue to grow.
Well, we can't wait. We can't wait to read the whole series, and we can't wait to read the second series. It's a great idea, and you're really populating it well.
Cool.
Thanks. I really appreciate it.
Well, the Carter endorsement's worth gold, Caleb, so take that to the bank.
Yeah.
I've got to platinum.
You.
So we do want to let everybody know that Caleb and Linda and Roxy and Charles, the Brakefield and Burkey team, and Joe Conjol, they're all on indiebooksource.com. If you go there and search authors, their books are there, and their contact information is there, too. So if you forget the names of their books or whatever, you can go there and always find them there.
IndieBookSource.com.
That was shameless.
That's a shameless promotion.
That's what we're here for. IndieBookSource.com.
There you go.
And if you're looking for old-fashioned thrillers, the way they should be written. Find anything that's written by Joe Conjul. It's a great.
Absolutely.
I'm looking at my Joe Conjul novel, Deadly Passion, right now, waiting for me to read it.
There you go. We're going to say good night and have a great rest of the show. We're going to stay with you, but give somebody else a chance to get a question.
Thanks for
checking in tonight, and we appreciate that. We appreciate you in the audience and everything you do for indie authors and for podcasters, and we just appreciate you both, Rob and Joan.
We appreciate
you
too.
We appreciate you guys too. You're hard workers.
Okay, thanks a lot. Take care. All right.
We do have a question on Twitter from Marlena Smith Burris. This might have worked a little better when Roxy was still on the phone. She's pointing out this is such an interesting idea. Multiple authors covering a single town. Where did the idea for this come from? Is that something that you can answer, Caleb? You know about that?
It is indeed. C.W. Halls, who lives down close to Houston, in Katy, Texas, he and I have been working together off and on for a long time, and he was always fascinated about multi-author series because that gives you an opportunity to have a lot of different writers all promoting the same series.
Yeah.
And you got to looking, and most of the multi-author series, in fact, virtually all of them, are themed. They're based on love. They're based on war. They're based on mystery. They're based on a theme. And we got to talking and thought, you know, it'd be fascinating to create a town, bring in a bunch of eccentric characters, let each person bring probably 10 or 15 characters to the town, and we all write about the same town and the same characters through different eyes. And the more we thought, the more excited we got. And we got on the email and contacted a bunch of our author friends, and like Rox and Charles and Cindy Davis and Jim Callum and Richard Schwentz and Linda, and then they were as excited as we are, and we thought, well, maybe we have stumbled on something. And it's been an absolute joy.
Cool.
All right.
You want to roll another commercial? We're moving along.
Yeah, let's throw one more tweet in here. Joe Conjul, before this gets, you know, past the subject, he says, thanks, guys. I just wanted to add that not only is Caleb a terrific author, he is also very generous with his time in promoting and helping other authors.
Great.
So
great.
There you go, another endorsement.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to Joe.
All right. Let's run the commercial for Operation Counterpunch.
North Korea will be the biggest challenge to your presidency, warned the outgoing commander-in-chief. But to imprisoned journalist John Jason, surviving each day in the prison camp proves the greatest challenge of his life. Protecting beautiful young prisoner Jisoo has also grown increasingly difficult for this slight man, otherwise powerless, but for his prowess at deceiving their captors. Navy SEAL Andrew Gunner Jackson is tasked by the president himself with gathering intel from the Hermit Kingdom. It's a dangerous gamble, where capture means summary execution, if he's lucky, or death the slow way in a North Korean prison re-education camp. Information is the least of his concerns, though, as the president agrees, he can leverage this mission to satisfy a few goals of his own. How far will each man go to fend off the cruel machinations of a ruthless dictator? And will that be enough for either to survive? Operation Counterpunch is ready to read now. Proudly published in hardcover, paperback, and all ebook formats by Fresh Ink Group. By Mark Marlowe. Operation Counterpunch.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so how about another phone call? Everybody up for that?
Go for it.
All right, so this one's going to be area code 903. Welcome to the show. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, my name is Jim Callan. I'm calling from Winsboro, Texas.
Well, welcome to the show, Jim. Do you have a question or a comment for tonight's guest?
Well, I'm going to toss in a comment. I'm involved in the Magnolia Bluff series, and I want to just comment on how much this group of authors have to work carefully together. Fortunately, they have all have access to Zoom, and we've had a lot of Zoom meetings to decide on things. But here's an example for you. I'm writing my book, and I have a character in it that I have picked up out of Caleb's book. But then when I get Caleb's book to read it, I find out that he's done away with that character. By that, I mean he's put her in jail, and I can't use her anymore. So fortunately for me, it was a minor character, although it was in several scenes. All I had to do was change the name. Fortunately, it wasn't center, and the actions were not necessary, so I could simply change the name. But it means that we had to tell people, oh, I'm going to kill this character off, or I'm going to bring in another character, a new character, and here's the bio so that you may want to use that character. So we had to have a close, really, relationship and a lot of information exchanging hands between 10 different writers.
That's kind of an interesting take there. I mean, if you would have to know exactly what's going on with the other writers' characters. And I guess this is where Zoom really comes in handy.
It does indeed. And Jim's book just came out this month. It's so you won't know how or when. And then it is a truly quite a genuine cozy mystery.
Wow. That's
Thank you, Caleb. That means a lot to Caleb.
Well, and the really fascinating thing is the different lead characters. For example, mine is a drifter who takes over the newspaper because he was hired to clean the presses and sweep the floor. And when the publisher leaves, there's nobody else to take it over. And since I've spent most of my life in the newspaper business, he was an easy character to write. But he spends more time in the cemetery than he does in the newspaper office, and that makes everybody in town a little suspicious. Jim's main character, this is a Catholic priest. CW's primary character is a fella who runs the real good wood-fired coffee shop. Linda's primary character is the librarian. Cindy Davis's primary character is a freewheeler from Florida who rolls through town on a motorcycle, and her motorcycle breaks down. So it's a really wide, strange assortment of characters who take the lead in these novels. And I think that's what gives them some life and spirit and personality.
Yeah, I find it fascinating, this whole concept.
Well, it's interesting, no doubt about that. And I found Caleb's press cleaner turned publisher to be such an interesting character that he became an important character in my book. Fortunately, Caleb had given us a very good biography of this character, so we knew a lot about him, even though it was Caleb's character. And that helped a lot, and so he became an important part in my book.
Now, is it difficult or is it easy to continue the character's personality continuity from you know, one book to the other with different people writing it? You know, because good writers can capture that personality. There's a continuity thing there, though. Is that easy to capture, or is that, you know, you got to work for it?
Well, of course, as has been said, often it's different people looking at the same person and seeing somebody different. And that's what's happening here. Different eyes are looking at that character and giving you a different perspective. Of course, you have to stay somewhat true to the character, but certainly you get a different perspective.
Interesting.
Well, for me, for example, Graham Houston was kind of abrupt and blunt. He was a war veteran. He has scars. He probably has PTSD and doesn't recognize it. And that was my character. But when Jim Springs comes in to talk to him, he's a lot nicer and takes more time and is just much more gentle in his conversation. And Linda, when she writes about him, he is crass, he is arrogant, and she doesn't like him at all. So that's the way it is with life.
Yeah, that kind of lends authenticity to the characters then, because it's not everybody seeing this character the same way. I mean, you keep trace elements of the personality, but, you know, certain people, you know, behave differently in different groups. It's just, you know,
and
human nature.
Circumstances.
Yeah.
You're exactly right.
It opens up lots of possibilities for different ways to use your point of view techniques, too.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Do you have any more to add, Jim?
Oh, just to say that this has been quite a pleasure and an honor to work with such a talented group of writers on a project that is extremely interesting. Difficult, yes, but interesting, absolutely. And I think we are fortunate to have a lot of talented people there.
Well, we're all writing the book that we never expected to write. I write historical mysteries and historical thrillers, and this one is modern day.
Yeah. You're coming out of your comfort zone, so to speak, and, you know, stretching out.
Well, I came so far out of my comfort zone because I've always written third-person past tense, and I've written this one in first-person present tense as though it's all happening at the exact moment you're reading. And then for me, that was just an entirely different kind of mission, and I found out I kind of liked it.
Oh, I like it, too. I only did one novel that way, and the fact that there's no hindsight opens up all kinds of possibilities.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
It kind of rejuvenates you.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what happens tomorrow, because tomorrow is real.
And I wound up kind of going that way because I wanted my character to be real self-righteous, thinking that he knew everything that was going on and he knew what was right and what to do about this, so that when he turned out wrong, he couldn't have hindsight during the times when he thought he was right, you know? So you can't tell the story that happened last year. You got to tell it as it's happening so that we see the change in the characters.
That's exactly right. And then by doing this, you really magnify the flaws.
Yep.
And it's the flaws in the character that makes them interesting. Their good points are kind of dull. Their secrets, the past they don't want you to know about, and the mistakes and the flaws, that's what gives them life.
Yeah.
And in my case, for instance, I brought in a central character, the lead character of another series. As Caleb mentioned, this Catholic priest, he is the protagonist in another series of books. And he discovered in the course of operating down there in Magnolia Bluff, he discovered something about himself that he didn't really know beforehand. Now, in fact, the readers may have suspected it. He himself discovered it down in Magnolia Bluff, involved in the situation there. So I had co-opted him from another series of my books, and he fit in quite well.
Interesting.
That's what makes it worth reading and writing.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in and adding to the conversation, Jim. We appreciate that.
Yeah, good meeting you, Jim.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having us. I appreciate it.
And again, if you have some kind of book coming out in the future, let us know. We'll always help promote, mention it on the show, in our newsletter, run up and down the street knocking on doors, you know.
I definitely will. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. All right, so moving on, we've got a couple more callers down here.
Want to throw another commercial in first?
Yeah, just a second here. I just brought a call in. Let me take the call back out. All right.
A grand epic saga by Robert McKenzie. The Chair spans centuries, touching the lives of 22 related mothers and daughters, their stories witnessed by a simple pine chair. Resolute, strong, loving, and fiercely protective, these women must strive to pass their values to new generations in a world of racism and sexism, politics, scandal, fashion, even the rise and dominance of baseball. They live in privilege and poverty, with faith and despair, relishing every moment of love, even as they suffer abiding grief. Volume 1, Lightning, Thunder, and Glory, spans the 1600s through World War I, while Volume 2, Faith, Hope, and Love, follows these women's descendants into modern times and beyond. An authentic and uniquely American novel, The Chair conjures the very hallmarks of history, yet navigates the simple intimacy of everyday lives to reveal who and why we are. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, The Chair Volumes 1 and 2 are available worldwide in jacketed keepsake hardcover edition, handy softcover, and all major ebook formats from Kindle to Nook, Kobo, Google Play, iTunes, and more. Everybody sits, so find your own seat and discover The Chair.
Yeah.
All right.
Volume 3 we're looking at in October, and then we're looking at Volume 4 next spring sometime. But Caleb, there's an example of historical fiction with an unusual conceit for you, a sweeping, spanning saga where the central character, as it were, is a piece of furniture.
Piece of furniture.
Well, you know, that's one, it sounds like a great book, a series of books. And two, whoever writes your trailers, whoever writes your ads is brilliant. I mean, that's as good as you're going to find anywhere.
Well, thank you.
And I've been around a long time, and I've heard a lot of them.
Well, basically, when I write those, I write the blurbs for the books that we publish. Basically, I pull that blurb and then just modify it some to make the trailer script, because the blurb's already got the good stuff in it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, you do it well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Maybe
let's bring in another caller.
Maybe we can make one for you sometime, Caleb.
I'm
hoping. Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. This one is area code 61. Welcome to the show. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello. Area code 651.
Oh, hi. This is C.W. Haas, and I'm calling from Katy, Texas.
Well, greetings, C.W. We've heard your name mentioned a few times tonight. Welcome to the show.
It's been batted around a little bit. Thank
you. I'm thinking we should just all get a big house together.
This is the fool who started it all.
So,
this is the one who started it all.
Well, I'm the one who tossed the hand grenade into the room and then wanted to see what would happen. So,
well, that's an interesting idea. Where did you come up? How did you come up with this idea?
I was at a virtual writers conference, and there was a woman there who was part of a science fiction group doing a multi-author deal, and what held their thing together was a robot, that everybody had this robot character in their book. And as Caleb had mentioned, when I brought the idea to our group of writers, I tossed it out there, and we quickly decided that it would be best if we had a town And then that way each of us could have a set of characters in that town and then play off of, you know, each of us could then play off of those characters plus our own characters that we created. And so that's how it all started. And so I'm glad that we're going on to a round two. That'll be a lot of fun. And so I'm looking forward to that. And so hopefully, you know, the readers out there are going to be excited about it too.
Yeah, it's I'm fascinated with the whole concept of that.
Well, and most of the authors I've talked to, there are four phases. I don't want to write this book. This is not my kind of style. Well, I guess I'll write the book. Or I can't wait to write the second one.
Now, I do have a question, though, for Caleb. I really like his Boomtown saga. I think Eudora and Doc, the two main characters, are just fabulous. I don't know how any guy reading that book couldn't fall in love with Eudora. And so I'm wondering if there are going to be more books in the series.
There are going to be more books. In fact, there would have been one already written if Magnolia Bluff hadn't reared its ugly head. but the interesting thing is, as we talked about earlier, I was born and raised in a boom town. And I grew up on the streets listening to all the early oil field stories that emanated from the days of the Great Depression. And those stories kind of tucked away into the back of my mind. And I woke up one day and thought, you know, nobody's ever really written about the East Texas oil boom. And I think I will. And so that's when I started. And the Doc character was really fashioned after the old wildcatter, Dad Joyner, who came into town with $45 in his pocket and was going to drill for oil. And he raised money to drill his first discovery well by going to Dallas. And he'd pick up a Dallas Morning News and read the obituaries and find the richest widow whose husband had an obituary, and he'd knock on her door. And Dad Joyner always said, every woman has a certain place on her neck that if you kiss it, she starts writing checks. Now he built the oil field.
Okay, so in other words, Caleb, what you're saying is that I'm the culprit who's delaying you from writing more Boomtown.
you're in.
And then had to call to ask him, where's the next one?
In fact, I never write books with anything resembling a hook at the end that makes you want to come and read the next book. In my last book in the Boomtown series, I did. And I haven't gone back and visited it yet. And every morning I feel guilty. So I guess I'll defray that guilt sooner or later.
That's like watching a series on Netflix and you watch every season, but that last season hasn't dropped yet. It's like,
play the main game.
It's just one of the next episodes.
Yep.
So. Well, that's good to know. That makes me feel a whole lot better because you know I have to confess, Eudora is sort of the secret love here, and so it's good to know she's going to make a comeback. So,
look, the ironic thing is, and you know this, see that this whole series was going to be written about Doc. This was Doc's book. I mean, he's an old fashioned, flim-flam, charlatan, charismatic, like a brush arbor evangelist. And I've always loved con men. back when I worked the police beat for the Star Telegram, I loved to write stories about con men. They fascinated me. That they were like magicians, that they were the great illusionists. So this was going to be about Doc. And I wrote the first chapter about Doc. I wrote the second chapter about Eudora. And when I finished it, Eudora had taken the story away from him, and I switched. Eudora leads off the book, and Doc's the second banana. And that happens sometimes.
Well, it's, you know, you do fall in love with your characters sometimes, and it may not be the character you were thinking, but when you fall in love with that character, then, yep, everything else goes out the window, that's for sure.
You're exactly right. It does indeed.
Yeah, that kind of, it's kind of like the old TV series Happy Days back in the 70s. The character of Arthur Fonzarelli was supposed to be just this, you know, occasional character in the background, but everybody loved him, and he ended up becoming the star of the show. And they much so that they wrote out, but actually didn't write out, they just quit writing Richie Cunningham's older brother Chuck, because Fonzie became the sort of the older brother, and they didn't need Chuck anymore. So Chuck just kind of disappeared.
He was much more interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, that happened in a lot of shows, really. Like Family Matters lost one of their children when that neighbor next door, Urkel, turned out to be the most popular thing on the show. So they turned it into the episodes were all about Urkel, and they didn't even need all those kids anymore. They quit writing them.
There you go.
That's one of my favorite old Western actors was Strother Martin. And he always had bit roles. So when you sat down to see a movie and you saw Strother Martin walk across the screen, you relaxed and said, this is going to be a good one.
What we
because
got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Exactly right.
Yeah, brilliant character.
He's wonderful.
Well, thanks for calling in, CW, and we got one more caller.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
That's
fine. Thank you. Good chatting with you guys, and I'll be back.
Yeah. All right.
Hey, thanks.
Have a good
night.
Thanks,
CW.
Good night.
All right.
Bye.
All right. So we'll do. We got one more caller here. Let's take care of this one. But the phone lines will remain open, everybody. So if you want to call in, even up to the last minute, we'll take calls. Area code 646. You are on the air. Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from? Hello, hello. Area code 646.
Is it me, Helen?
That's you.
It's you, Helen.
It's Helen
you.
Up here at Riverside Rehab.
All right. Well, welcome, Helen. This is Dr. Helen
and
Burrell.
And it's terrible to be partially paralyzed. But my brain isn't, and I love all your authors and you guys. And my voice doesn't sound real because it has something to do with the partial paralysis that they're working on.
Yes,
and
I'm
I just had some birthday
cake.
Strawberry shortcake.
Strawberry shortcake.
I don't know whose birthday it was. So how are you guys doing?
We are doing well. It is good to hear
great.
From you.
How are you doing on Twitter without me there?
Oh, it's...
Things are slow without you, so you got to get back.
Always
here
slow.
And,
I'm
we,
letting
we
you know,
usual,
guys,
though.
That I'm telling the doctors and nurses about your company and about my books.
Yeah.
So some are buying them, and one of the nurses bringing it up for me to sign the two books.
Yeah. Well, now we got. Now
how
we
do you
got
like that?
And now you can talk about Caleb Pernell, because you got to hear his podcast tonight and learn more about his books. And he's got some great series out there. So help us type them up, if you would.
Yeah.
I always liked the fact that you were always. I mean, you could be in the ambulance on the way to the hospital and trying to sell a book to the EMTs, and I always liked that.
Yeah, it's important to know
that
there's a new disease that nobody has named that befalls elders. It's weakened muscles when you're not exercising. We'll have to give it a fancy name.
Maybe they'll name it after you.
So if you have other You have other medical people in your group, right?
Yeah, a couple.
And they should look into that.
Yeah.
But it's not nice to be a patient.
No.
It's better to be at your typewriter or computer.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And all your great writers, keep writing.
Keep writing.
Yep. Well, thanks for calling in, Helen. We're glad to hear your voice. I know a lot of our listeners are glad to hear it, too. I don't know if you heard earlier, but we had a bunch of tweets from people wishing you the best.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I need it because there's still more recovery to do. This is an illness that could be fatal.
Yeah.
Imagine losing muscle strength because you never exercise. And I don't know what you call that. So I wish everybody well, but do lots of exercise. Don't just stay at the typewriter or computer.
Yeah.
You have to move your body.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Take that laptop and climb a tree. What's that, Kayla?
While you're moving your brain, you have to move your body. So take care, Beam and Gary, and be well.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for calling in, Helen.
All right, we'll
okay,
talk to you
I enjoy.
Bye.
Give
take
me
care.
A respite here.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right, over on Twitter, there is a tweet from Robert G. Willicroft, commenting about what we were talking about prior to Helen calling in. He says, in my series, The Ort Chronicles, a character took over in the second novel, forcing me to make a major revision in my outline. So there's another example. And
yeah,
Verwayne Greenhoe says, hello.
Another outliner, too.
Yeah. Verwayne Greenhoe says, hello, Helen Burrell. We have missed you. And it was good to hear from Helen on the phone tonight. So.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Well, Caleb, we're starting to run out of time here. You want to tell us a little bit more about some of the series or books that you haven't talked about yet?
Yeah.
When the series that I was really, and I guess all authors, the series you're working on at the time is the series that's the favorites. But my first one was the Ambrose Lincoln series. And really the fascinating thing is how it came to an existence. I was up late one night after midnight, just roaming the TV channels, couldn't sleep. And all of a sudden I ran across a documentary. And it was about real government experiments on the human mind back in the 1930s, when they were trying to be able to program human behavior and reprogram the brain. And they were using shock treatments, electrical shock treatments, LSD, hallucinatory drugs, anything so that they could erase the mind and reprogram it. And I thought, that's absolutely fascinating, and I didn't know it existed. And suddenly I heard a voice that said, that's me. And it was Ambrose Lincoln. And he said, they took my mind away because they believe that a man without a memory is a man that has no fear and will do things that other people wouldn't dare. And that's the way the Ambrose Lincoln series came about. It's back in the late 1930s, just prior to and right after World War II. It's not a war story, but the World War II plays a dramatic backdrop into the series. And it's long before we had a CIA, but we did have operatives working in Germany. And the man without a memory is the man that's there first. And that's what my Ambrose Lincoln series is all about.
And what time period is that set in?
It's the late 1930s and the early 1940s, just prior to World War II. And just after the war starts. And like I say, that's the driving backdrop. The first novel, Secrets of the Dead, as you all know, in World War II, the government did not want to go to war because too many major American companies was making far too much money off of the German marketplace. and they did not want to anger Germany. And it took, it really took of the Night of Broken Glass in Baden-Baden for the secret of the atrocities of what Germany was doing to get out. And this is the story of Lincoln going to Baden-Baden after the Night of Broken Glass and coming back with photographs that splashed on the front page of the New York Times, and that's what woke America up. And as always, most of my books and most of a lot of novels may be totally fictional, but as we said earlier, they're all based on a single nugget of truth.
Yeah, they have to be. If you want people to be pulled into that world, that it's believable. My first novel that I wrote, Jazz Baby, that's set in the 1920s, 1925 to be exact. And it's all fiction, but I had to get things right in there for that time period, you know, so you can paint that picture of what it was like to be back. And,
Well, you're exactly right.
In fact, I do
a lot more research on fiction than I do on my nonfiction.
Hmm.
And in fact, there's a scene or a chapter in the book where the German locomotive comes into Poland, Poland, and picks up the Jewish people to take to a concentration camp. And I did the research until I found the name of the company that owned the railroad and the number that was on the train, which I included. Now, most people will read that and will just think, you know, that's something I made up, but I know the difference.
Yeah.
And that's all that counts.
That's all that counts. Although there is somebody else out there that will always notice it. Always. And we'll catch it. Always.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, you had mentioned that, you know, American companies making money off of Germany at the time. Prescott Bush was heavily invested in Nazi Germany, so much so that he ended up, once we got into the war, he was still doing business with them, and he got in trouble with Congress. And you can still find the sanctions put on him by Congress in the congressional record that's still there. I read that years ago. But it's just amazing that you're doing business with somebody that we're at war with. It's like, really?
Yeah, and somebody who's guilty of so many atrocities, it's not just a war. It's a war on the human soul.
Yeah.
And in fact, a lot of the great names in American business, if you go back and do the research, like Bush, you can find their names linked. And it's always a shock, because we don't realize it because they don't teach it in school.
No.
We've been
pretending to deal with
all too long.
Well, you'd be amazed at what they don't teach in Alabama schools. They literally keep passing laws down here. You can't teach this and you can't teach that. So your next book, Eulogy in Black and White, what can we expect from that?
Well, Eulogy in Black and White was the one that I just did. The next one, I don't have named yet. Because I hadn't started on it. I'm working on two other books to get out, both nonfiction books. In fact, I have a book just coming out probably next month on Border, Texas. It's called Border, The Last Dance Before Sundown. And Border was an oil boom town back in the 1920s that had the reputation as the wickedest town in Texas because it was run by gamblers, brothels, dance hall girls, and beer joint smugglers. So it's coming out soon. And then I have another book on a former SMU All-American basketball player. It'll be out probably just before Christmas. I'm writing on it as we speak.
All right. Okay. So, What sort of fan reaction are you getting from your books, you know, reviews or emails or people hitting you up on Twitter? What kind of reaction are you receiving?
You know, they're getting extremely favorable reviews. And then, you know, there's some reviews by people I know, and you thank them for giving you a nice, wonderful review, but you wonder if they might be just a little prejudiced.
Hmm.
because they want you to buy them a drink the next time you're at the bar.
Oh, yeah.
But, those reviews, yeah, it's those reviews from people you've never heard of, you don't know. In fact, the Boomtown, the first book, Backside of a Blue Moon, I got a review from a lady I'd never heard of that said, this book should go down as a classic in American literature. And she compared it to The Grapes of Wrath. So, you know, that was kind of a stunner. That's like turning your head around the corner and find out somebody really likes what you did. And that both flatters you, honors you, and extremely humbles you. And you swear, if you thought it was good this time, I'm going to work real hard to try to be better next time.
Yeah, that's high praise. That's high praise.
The next book has to be better than the last one.
I mean, Steinbeck, he's one of my all-time favorites. He's a lot of people's all-time favorites.
And I love his comedies. Everybody remembers his Of Mice and Men and The Pearl and Grapes of Wrath. But, you know, Cannery Row and Sweet Thursday are just
Cannery
Row's
my favorite. I love Cannery Row. And they even did a good job on the movie on that. And they don't always do a good job on Steinbeck movies.
Grapes of Wrath.
They stayed faithful to the book.
Yeah.
And in fact,
Grapes
it was it should be outlawed if they didn't stay faithful to the book, because the book had all the heart and soul and humor that you'd ever want. And down on the wrong side of the wrong part of town.
Yeah, Grapes of Wrath, when they got to making the movie, they actually sewed in government propaganda into it. You're right, during the Depression, and they were selling the government and Roosevelt and his plans as the savior, and you didn't see that in the book, but that's how they sewed it into the movie. Still a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Love Henry Fonda, but I picked up that.
Well, Henry Fonda made the movie because most people watched Henry Fonda and probably glossed over the propaganda, but it was there. And like you said, it wasn't in the book, and then the book will just leave you breathless.
Yes. That's one of my, to this day, one of my all-time favorite books. And I also liked his memoir, Travels with Charlie, where he did this cross-country travel with his dog. You know, when they were both elderly, he called them a couple of elderly gentlemen, him and his dog.
and Steinbeck could do it with heart and with a lot of warmth as well as humor. And then he could get away with it.
So, Caleb, do you have advice?
Jack Kerouac did the same thing, and from a totally different perspective, and they were both brilliant works.
Do you have advice for the other authors out there who are listening?
You know, the single piece of advice that I would give authors is, you go to writers' conferences and you've listened to writers talk about writing, and then they tell you all of these rules, and that you must begin the book with a hook, and you've got to do this, and you've got to do that. And the reality is, when it's all said and done, there are all no rules in writing. It's all about the story. Write the story that you want to tell exactly the way you want to tell it. Now, there's some things you can do to improve your writing, but it's all about the story. And you read the great books and then the popular books, and they're all totally different. Otherwise, if people went by the same formula, all the books would read alike. And today, too many of them do read alike. They read like the last television show they watched. But the books, when you really have a story that's burning in your heart and demanding that it must be written because it must be read, that's the way you tell it. In fact, I interviewed James Patterson one time, and he said, the way I write my book is as though I'm sitting across the table from one person, and I'm telling that one person the story. And that may be the best way to tell it.
Let's hope that person leaves reviews on Amazon.
And Hugh's in the voice of Indy.
Yeah, there you go.
So, Caleb, how can people contact you? Social media, blog, website, Facebook, Instagram?
Or at least learn more about you.
Or at least learn more about you.
I have a website, which is a pretty serious website, called simply CalebandLindaPirtle.com. And we devote 90% of the website to obviously our books and other books. In fact, we put at least 2 books every day on the website, because there are a lot of really fine indie authors out there, and people want to read books, but they want to read books that are well written, that tell a story and make you glad that you finished that last page. So we try to track those books down, curate them, and promote them. And as a result, you can find our books. We had Beam's book up the last 2 days as our Book of the Moment Club selection.
Stephen
will be getting to use next week. And the thing is, people are looking for that. They're looking for places to browse that has independence. Somebody that said, "Hey, it's kind of like your website. Hey, this is a good book. You need to take a chance on it." So they can find us at CalebandLindaPirtle.com. I have a blog there 2 or 3 times a week, and it generally has to do about something with books or with travel or with writing. And they can always find me on Twitter. It's at Caleb Pirtle. They can find me on email, and I love to receive emails and love to answer emails. And it's CalebPirtle2@gmail.com. And that's CaleB, P as in Paul, IR, T as in Tom, LE, 2@gmail.com. And they can always find me at Facebook.
Great. And listeners, as always, if you're trying to track down any of our authors, members, or guests on this show, and you kind of didn't get that name exactly right or not sure how to find them, we've got contact forms on all of our websites, like freshinkgroup.com. Send us a note. We'll connect you with the author that you want to talk to.
Hey, that's a great service.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the problem is authors have too many names that are spelled the same way and different ways.
Yeah,
definitely.
Hey, thanks for letting me come on. It's been a great night.
It's been a treat having you on, and I want to stress definitely, you know, as soon as these books are ready, let us know. We'll help promote them. We'll get the word out there and try to get you back on the show again. And we need to talk to Linda, too, one of these days.
Yeah.
She would love to talk to you. You'd learn something interesting from her. I just ran the race.
Okay. All right. And then, listeners, next week, our guest is going to be Patrick Parker.
And then following that, we have the return guest, Patricia A. Guthrie, a stellar storyteller.
She's going to be talking about Water Lilies Over My Grave, and then Ash Looney with the book Practical Problems, which is the 10 plays that we talked about a little bit earlier. And next week's show, we should have the commercial running for that one as well.
After that, we have others lined up. I just have to get them booked and then get the show created. But we've got a whole bunch of people lined up through August and going into September, so we're going to have some fun times.
We did some analytics last night on the newsletter, and we're finding that our newsletter interaction, the opens, the clicks, and all that kind of stuff, are steadily rising. We're starting to see some numbers that we're really feeling good about here. So again, we want to stress, subscribe to that newsletter. We're trying to put some quality content in there every week, not just information about our shows and stuff, but things about the publishing industry or other authors, other books, trailers you can watch and whatnot. So we try to keep it quick, light, simple, interesting. If you haven't already subscribed, get out there and do it now, because we get happy and it makes our tails wag.
Yeah, indeed. All right.
So
well,
thanks again, Caleb. We'll see everybody next week.
Thank you, Caleb. We will run a commercial and then close out the show. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
If you ever find yourself on a strange highway, Don't turn around. Don't panic. Just keep going. You never know what you'll find. Could be an autistic young man conjuring magic with his fingers. Or one girl's afternoon leading to a lifetime of loss. Demon or angel. A winged man revealing his true nature. A mother's recognition bringing closure to her daughter. Sudden death of a teen boy stifling burgeoning secrets. Black man's guitar transforming one young boy. Decades-old accident bringing a desperate confession. Supernatural first love healing a broken family. Head on down the strange highway and see more stories unfold. Need a ride? This book will get you there. Catch an e-book or get on the bus with a nice print edition you can hold and keep. Perhaps a full-sized trade paperback. Or ride in style with your own dust-jacketed hardcover. Fresh Ink Group's got you covered. You can exit the strange highway and come back anytime you want. You see, now you know the way in. Don't be a stranger.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.